And welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm Linda Palaccio here on Heritage Radio Network. And today we are sponsored by Dixon's Farmstand Meats in Chelsea Market, New York City. A really terrific butcher shop. If you haven't been and you live in the New York area, I encourage you to go. Next week, they're going to be starting lunches, serving lunch, and even roast chickens to take home. Gabe Ross is the guy behind the stove doing all the charcuterie, and Jake Dixon is the owner, and they specialize in traceable meats. So they know the farmers, and they know how they were slaughtered, and they will tell you where the animal came from that you're buying, and it's all really good quality meat, and Adam Tiberio is their master butcher. Great group of guys, great butcher shop, Dixon's Farmstand Meats. Today, I am very pleased to have with us Michelle Ciccoloni.
Hi, how are you, Linda?
I'm good. Thanks, Michelle, for coming. Michelle, actually, I titled today's show Slow and Low. Michelle is an authority on Italian cooking and an author of 14, where we and counting, 14 yeah. cookbooks, yeah. And also does culinary tours, is a culinary tour guide, and has been on television shows and radio shows. We were talking about all the different shows she's done. But her most recent book kind of struck a different interest with me. She wrote the book The Italian Slow Cooker. What inspired you to write The Italian Slow Cooker?
Well, I had never been one of the fans of slow cookers until not too long ago, a few years ago. I was in Italy, in Rome, and I saw a pot of beans simmering on the hearth in this restaurant. It was a wood-burning fire, and they had this big glass bottle, and it was full of beans and liquid and garlic and herbs. Very, very simple. And the beans, the water was just barely moving. It was just barely simmering. And I thought to myself, wow, that's like the original slow cooker. If only I could cook beans that way. But of course, in my apartment, I don't have anything like that kind of equipment. Certainly no wood-burning fireplace. So I got home and I thought, well, gee, I wonder if a slow cooker would accomplish that, cooking the beans low and slow so each one just swells and gets tender and delicious. And I bought a cooker and I tried it and I loved it. And that was the beginning of the odyssey.
Well, and it's interesting, beans of all things, because that was the original slow cooker in early colonial America, too. The bean crocks, right?
I was reinventing the wheel.
Right. Well, I did. I don't know if you did a little research. I did a little research on slow cookers.
Yeah.
Did you? I mean, they haven't been around that long.
No, they haven't been. From what I understand, the first electric bean cooker came out in around 1970. And it was a company called Naxon that produced a pot that they call the beanery. The rival company bought Naxon, and they sort of repackaged it, painted it avocado and gold, harvest gold.
all those popular appliance colors right, of the days. Right?
Exactly. Typically 1970. And they put it out as the crock pot. And the crock was for the liner, which is a porcelain or ceramic liner. And the outer section of the device was a metal pot. And so that's how it got the name crock pot. And that it became popular in no time at all because it was very timely. They were very wise to put it out then because a lot of women were going off to work.
That's right.
Before that time, it wasn't such a common thing. But women were looking for a very convenient way to cook a meal.
Mm-hmm. And I also I remember food cooked in crock pots. And I never owned one during that time, I have to say. But it always seemed a little bit bland or, you know, they're all tasting the same. And that's what's so marvelous about this book that you've written, that it's the dishes do not have to taste bland. Right?
Well, you know, any dish, and this is something that I remember hearing Julia Child say, it's only going to be, what you get out of the pot is only going to be as good as what you put into the pot. So if you use a lot of packaged and artificial ingredients, I don't know, seasoning packages and cans of things, it's not going to be any better than what you put in, right?
That's right.
But
that's right.
It only seemed logical to me that if I started with fresh ingredients, good herbs and so forth, fresh meat, it would be very delicious and very tasty, because slow cooking is a natural way of cooking so many things. And it's something that when you look at all of the different cultures, there are in history, I mean, people used to dig a pit and put some hot stones in it, and they would add meat or root vegetables and cover it up and come back hours later, and things were tender and they were fit to eat. And this is historically a way to cook food. This is just the contemporary way of adapting things to a long, slow, gentle cooking.
That's right. I mean, braising. Braising has just, it seems like young chefs suddenly felt like they've discovered something new, and that's braising. And everyone braises, and they braise for, like, you know, a cut of meat for 3-4 hours, very low. You know, it's funny, in reading about the slow cookers, there was some controversy, I don't know, in the late 70s about the temperature. The temperature didn't get high enough, and there was a caution about food poisoning, which then didn't nearly pan out to be anything. But sous vide. Now, sous vide is like a water bath slow cooker, right?
Uh-huh.
And now that's the new hot thing. And of course, the health authorities are saying the same thing. The temperature, you have to be careful. They can't cook it as low as that. Then watch out for food poisoning. Bring the minimum temperature up. But these are all things that have been taken care of by the companies, I assume.
Yes. Nowadays, the new slow cookers cook much hotter than the original ones do. So if you have an older slow cooker, you should keep in mind that it's probably going to take longer to cook your food than if you've just bought one of the new hot models. They definitely cook at a much higher temperature, and so the cooking time is probably going to be a little bit less. But you know what you said about sous vide applies to anything. You've got to be careful. You can't just cavalierly fill the pot to the tippy top and turn it on low and go away and expect the food to cook properly. There are certainly some precautions that make sense, and I think people need to be aware of that. Yeah. I keep reading about people putting like frozen chicken into a slow cooker, and that's definitely a no-no. Definitely not. So caution is the...
Yeah, I notice that you do give a lot of guidelines, nice guidelines, in the beginning of the book. Well, the crock pot certainly fell out of favor for a while, and we in America started discovering good food, international cuisines, and we sort of cast the crock pot aside, along with the chia pets and the fondue pots.
You know, I'm not sure that people really cast them aside. Maybe they used them less, or they talked about it less, or maybe they were just talking about the latest hottest ingredients more. But I read a statistic that just astounded me. Something like 85% of American homes.
I saw that too.
Isn't that awesome?
85% of American homes own
a crock pot or a slow cooker. Yeah.
Right.
Crock pot being of course.
And I thought, come on, that's got to be a high statistic. I never owned one, but I will now say that year before last, when all the fancy models were coming out, I said, well, maybe this is something I should try out. Yeah. And I did buy a slow cooker, and I have to say it is really a fun thing to use, because you can just walk away and not worry about it, rather than worrying, oh my God, did I leave the gas on? You know, how many pots of beans have I burned?
Yes.
Burned the bottom of the pot, you know.
Or overcooked and they fall apart. Well, and Italian cooking, it seems to me, is just ideal. There are so many wonderful Italian dishes that work in the slow cooker. Think of all of the delicious slow-cooked ragouts, you know, the soups. I make polenta in it. And Italians have never had access to the quality of meats that we have here in this country. And so an Italian home cook really needs to extract the most from tougher cuts, leaner cuts of meat. And slow cooking it is an ideal way to do it, or braising, as you say. And for people who are hesitant about getting a slow cooker, I say to them, you know what? Think of it as an electric braiser.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, and maybe that's a name I should patent for it. But it braises to perfection without having to worry about food scorching and gets all the best out of those lean, tough cuts and bones.
And you can put it on a timer and walk away.
That's right.
But, you know, it's interesting that you've, of course, being an authority in Italian cooking, and I think all but maybe one of your cookbooks are all Italian cuisine.
Actually, three of them are not.
Three.
Yeah, I did a cookbook with Laurent Turandell a few years ago, and that wasn't. But I also worked on The Joy of Cooking as an editor, so I've had a lot of experience with other cuisines as well.
But, you know, the Italians, as you say, they've had to extract flavor, cook the long sauces. But there was always the mama in the kitchen.
That's
so there
right.
was always, you know, the kitchen was always hot. There was always a pot on the stove and the mm-hmm. smells coming up. I remember when we lived there years ago, it would drive me crazy because we had the apartment looked out onto a courtyard, well, and you would start, you know, at like 10:30 in the morning, the smells would start wafting up to our floor of all the great things that we're cooking. And I said, well, either I've got to join them or I've got to go hungry. And that was wonderful. So a lot of the Italian dishes you've adapted are just naturals. If you can't be at home, there are no mamas in the kitchen in large part in today's culture. So this is perfect.
No, certainly not in Italy. Most women go out to work. And a number of years ago, I was doing my book, Italian Holiday Cooking, and I was astounded.
I love that book, by
Thank
the way.
You. Thank you very much. I was astounded because I would ask people, you know, oh, the holidays are coming, Christmas is around the corner. What will you make for your holiday celebration? And they would just look at me and shrug and say, oh, well, we don't fuss. We don't have the time. You know, we just, you know, maybe we'll roast a chicken and we'll get some pasta from the pasta store. And so Italians really are letting go of those traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important that those of us who value it so much really preserve the Italian flavors and culture and historical flavors. I think they'll come back around to it. A lot of the young chefs especially will say, hey, I'm not going to put aside all of those wonderful historical flavors, but it's essential that we do it if they need help.
we'll give their culture and heritage back to them.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Well, you see a lot of things going back across the pond, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, it's interesting because I was looking through some of the recipes in the book, and it's a beautiful book, and it's photographed beautifully as well.
Yeah, Alan Richardson's a great photographer, and it's got lots of photos in it. They did a great job with that.
And one of the things, it's interesting because when one of our colleagues, Rick Rogers, in 1992, he wrote a book on, I think, on slow cookers and kind of reviving the interest in slow cookers again. And he said, slow cookers are great. It's how we've been cooking with them that's wrong, which is essentially what you say in your book,
that's
too.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people, I think, didn't want to, as you mentioned in your book, do any preparation before they turned it on. So talk about that a little bit.
I still see that. It's interesting to see the reactions that I get to my book. Some people are just thrilled to have real food coming out of a slow cooker and are so appreciative of the recipes because they are flavorful and they adhere to the tradition of Italian cooking. But other people say, wow, this book, there's so much work. I don't have time to brown the vegetables or, you know, the meats and before I put them into the pot. And it's unfortunate because they just want to. It's just the kind of cook that loves to open that package of seasoning mix and a can of Pepsi and throw it.
I say, if I have to do all that, why have a slow cooker, right?
Right. Right.
But they'll get so much more out of it.
Of course.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk more and about some of your other books and about some of these great recipes that are in The Italian Slow Cooker.
Thank you.
Welcome back to A Taste of the Past. We're talking with Michelle Ciccoloni about her newest book, Italian Slow Cooking, No, the Italian slow cooker. Italian slow cooker. But it's about Italian slow cooking. And Michelle, we were talking about how some people just don't like to do the preparation before they put food in a slow cooker. And yet all these traditional slow cooked recipes had them doing the same steps.
Of course. There was someone was complaining about that and said, it says on the back of the book, cook like an Italian grandmother. Well, Italian grandmother, that's misleading. Why wouldn't your Italian grandmother saute the meats or a lot of dishes are just fine without that kind of, without a lot of advanced preparation. There's so many dishes that you just put everything in and turn it on and walk away. I made a beef brisket, and I never browned the meat, and I didn't brown the onions, and the flavors were just wonderful, just really lovely and subtle and oniony and rich. And
a lot of it is for aesthetic purposes too. People don't want to eat a beige chicken or beige meat.
Well,
but the caramelization does add flavor too.
It does add flavor. It changes the texture. It speeds up the cooking. There are a lot of things that the caramelization does, but people should be aware that it is not essential in every case, you know. And when I think it's absolutely essential, I'll say so in the book. But there are plenty of recipes that don't take a lot of preparation. Just put everything in.
Well, I was so surprised and pleasantly surprised to look at the dessert chapter, and you've got these wonderful dense cake. I have to tell you, there is a truffle cake in Michelle's book that I'm definitely going to make for Valentine's Day. But a dessert in a slow cooker. But then you think about steamed puddings and steamed cakes.
Yes. People say, well, why would you bother to make a dessert in a slow cooker? For me, I have just one oven in my kitchen. So if I'm roasting a turkey or something and I want to make a cheesecake, I can use my slow cooker as an adjunct to the one oven that I have. Also, in the summertime when it's really hot, I don't want to heat up the whole house by turning on the oven. The slow cooker is a nice alternative to that. But best of all, it just does such a wonderful, gentle cooking for like custard baked cakes, I'm thinking of cheesecakes or that flourless chocolate cake.
Yeah.
It just cooks really gently, doesn't brown on the top. The cheesecakes never crack.
And it keeps a lot of steam, and almost like a steamed pudding.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's really what you need to understand about slow cookers is that they work with very low temperature, but they also, there's no evaporation. So if you're adapting a traditional recipe to the slow cooker, you should always start with less liquid than you would if you were cooking it on the stovetop or in the oven, because the steam doesn't escape. And that's what creates that wonderful atmosphere for cheesecakes and other cakes.
Well, there are just a host of recipes that that I look forward to trying from this book. And I would encourage people to look at it. It will change your mind about the crock pot. But don't dust off your old crock pot. I suggest going and getting a newer version of the slow cookers.
Well, the new slow cookers have a lot of developments. I mean, it's still a very low tech piece of equipment when you consider the things that we're confronted with nowadays. But it's they do have timers. They do so that they'll automatically turn off. They're programmable to, let's say, start at high, switch to low, then go to warm. They have longer cooking capability. There are signals that sound when the cooking time is done or is changing. So they do have a lot of nice features nowadays that the old ones didn't have.
Yeah, and I wonder how many of those glass fiascos of beans cracked and spilled when someone stoked the fire up a little too high.
Yeah, right? There's that.
So you don't have to worry about that at all. You mentioned some of the other books that you have written, and the Italian Holiday Cooking. Uh-huh. As I say, that is one of my favorite books.
Thank you.
Some very interesting recipes in there. Which of the books did you have, let's say, the biggest love affair with?
Well, quite possibly it was the 1,000 Italian recipes. When the idea was first broached to me, 1,000 Italian recipes, it's going to take a lifetime. And I thought, but I've already devoted my lifetime to developing Italian recipes and traveling in Italy. I've been traveling in Italy since 1970.
And you give and you also conduct culinary tours in Italy too, correct?
Yes, my husband and I bring groups to Italy and we visit wineries and factories where they make cheeses and artisan producers of all different kinds.
Your website, MichelleCiccoloni.com.
Yeah, okay. It's easy to find. If you know my name, and
spell it right, producer.
What was I saying?
Your favorite book, A Thousand Italian Recipes.
Exactly. So I started out with my family's traditional recipes because, of course, I'm Italian American, and I had a lot of wonderful traditional recipes from my grandparents that I developed, you know, of course, like everybody's grandma, it was a pinch of this and a soup spoon of that, and I managed to codify them and, you know, write them down in an organized way, and then in my travels in Italy, I've found all of these wonderful, wonderful traditional recipes, new recipes, you know, things that were just creations of a local chef that didn't have any tradition behind them at all, but they are Italian. And so I was able to bring all of that together, all of my 40 years of research almost, into 1,000 Italian recipes. So it's a terrific book. And I hear over and over again, people say that it's just like their go-to book. Oh, I have some zucchini. What am I going to do with it? You know, I bought a pound of fish. Now what? You know, and it's a book that you'll find the answer to your questions.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah. Well, Michelle is also the author of two Sopranos cookbooks from the famed HBO series.
Yes,
Sopranos, the Soprano Family Cookbook, was that the first one?
The first one is Sopranos Family Cookbook.
Yeah. What was that like? I mean, did you actually consult with the members of the cast to find their favorite recipes?
I mostly worked with, my biggest contact was with David Chase, who is the creator of the show. And when they called me in to ask me if I'd be interested in doing the book, someone on their staff had seen some of my previous work. We got into a conversation about the kinds of dishes I would imagine that the Sopranos family would be cooking and eating, you know, if they were genuine, real people. And because my family is from the same region of Italy as David Chase's family, it struck a chord with him, and the list of possible recipes really, I remember that, he wrote, and, you know, and don't forget to make this, and so forth and so on. So,
well, and food was such a big part of the series as well.
They
were always sitting down for dinner.
Well, for an Italian-American, it's a big part of life. It's everything. Everything revolves around meals and food and sharing and eating well. And drinking wine to go with it. And so that's how the book got started. And David Chase was very meticulous about everything on the show. That's why it was so excellent. And he also had a lot to say about what went into the book, too. Mm-hmm. So I'd say about a third of the recipes were things that you would find on the show, that they would be talking about on the show or eating on the show. And a third of them were my family's recipes that, as I learned to cook them from my grandmother, who came from the Naples area. And then I'd say about a third of them were more contemporary recipes that I could imagine the Sopranos would be eating, Italian Americans eat today.
Well, with the title, I think a lot of people who picked it up would not consider it necessarily a serious cookbook, but once they looked through it and saw the recipes, they would see that, wow, these are actually authentic recipes.
Yeah, I heard that over and over again. It was very gratifying. People who said, I never thought these recipes would work, but wow, they're great. And it was a number one book, New York Times book, for weeks and weeks. It really is very successful.
That's really something. Did you have any travel time with them, and as far as, you know, advertising the book, did they?
Yeah, we did a few shows together in the New York area. I didn't travel with them, but we did the Today Show, and I prepared the food for that, and it was a lot of fun. I met there was a big party for the book when it came out, so I've met them on a number of occasions, and the actors are terrific. They're just a bunch of regular
regular guys, you know.
Regular guys.
They
are. Thank goodness they're regular guys. You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about back to the Italian slow cooker and reading through a lot of the recipes, but it's interesting that all of a sudden I thought of the flip side, which maybe will be your next book, because for Italians it was always, obviously, what we all know now is the best way to cook, the freshest ingredients, the best quality ingredients.
Yes.
But also it was fast. Things. A lot of Italian recipes were not cooked for a long, long time. They
it's
were
true.
Very simply prepared. Mm-hmm. You know, give it a quick turn and out on the plate. Maybe that's the next book. Fresh maybe, and fast. Huh?
Maybe it is. I don't know. I'll have to give that some thought. But there are so many Italian things that just work so well in the slow cooker. And I was just astonished. For example, one of my big successes was making polenta in the slow cooker.
That when I read that, I said, that's it. I will never do it the old-fashioned way again.
It's a breeze. You know, I never liked making polenta because when it starts to simmer and bubble, I wind up splashing, getting myself splashed, and my hands get old.
And if you get any burned particles on the bottom, forget it. The whole batch is ruined.
Yeah. But you never have to worry about that in the slow cooker. You just put everything in.
Well, that, you know, it's interesting because you pretty much have answered the question, but that was when I read the book, too. There were some dishes, some of the recipes that really didn't require long cooking that you have in the book, but that they're just improved by the long cooking. Some of the sauces and things that I wouldn't have thought of, like the gardener's sauce.
Uh-huh.
Describe that one.
That's a delicious sauce, and it's made with a lot of different vegetables chopped up, carrots, onions, celery, cabbage, zucchini, and you can really put in just about anything that's in season. And they're all put into the pot and then slowly, slowly cooked. And then what happens is the vegetables lose much of their individual identity and come out into this whole flavor that you know, everything is married together, and it's terrific over pasta, whole wheat pasta, for a very healthy, very simple meal.
So it really pretty much changes the nature of the original dish, I would imagine, unless somebody did cook it. I mean, unless it was originally meant to be a sauce like that, meant to be cooked a long time. Is this your own creation?
No, it was something that I had originally eaten in the Parma area. Mm. In fact, it was in Verdi's town. Giuseppe Verdi was born in Roncoli Verdi. Mm. And there used to be a wonderful restaurant there many, many years ago. And the chef made that dish and grated lots of fresh Parmigiano over the top of it. And I just loved it. It was just something I'd never eaten before, and I thought it was marvelous.
So it really was like a pistou. It really was meant to be
eaten with pasta,
and cooked a long time.
And cooked a long time.
Till it.
You know, Italians are not. They do like their vegetables well cooked. You know, that whole French thing with the vegetables being crisp, tender, and all that. It's not really the Italian way. Salads, of course, are different. They're raw, but most vegetables in the Italian kitchen are well cooked. Mm-hmm. So an Italian would not have any qualms about slow cooking their vegetables up
a long time. Now that brings me to the question: Is there an Italian version of a slow cooker, and have Italians embraced a slow cooker to your knowledge?
I have never seen an electric slow cooker in Italy, but Italians have different electronic devices, electrical equipment than we have for their kitchens. For example, they have a wonderful piece of equipment that's sort of a combination of a blender and a pot, a cooking pot. And so if you've, let's say, made a soup, you can then just flip the switch and it will puree the soup right there in the same pot, which I think is a great device.
I mean, we have, so what do we have to do? We have to take our immersion blenders and stick it in the pot. Right,
or transfer it to a blender.
Yeah, a blender, right.
So, I mean, they have equipment that they have that wonderful electric polenta pot. I don't know if you've ever seen one.
Yes.
And
the Japanese have the rice cookers. I mean, so slow cookers are, they are just sort of a natural thing, but I never thought, you know, about putting polenta in a slow cooker.
Yeah, it's a great solution. And what else is wonderful about it is that if your polenta is ready, but the rest of your meal is not, or your guests are delayed, the polenta will stay without turning to cement the way it might on the stovetop. It'll stay nice and warm and keep perfectly smooth and spoonable in your slow cooker.
Oh, that's interesting. That's great. That's something to, a good thing to remember. Mm-hmm. So, again, get out your crock pots. Maybe those fondue sets. We got get those fondue sets out and think of the next thing to do with those.
Oh, that's an idea.
The chia pets, I don't know. I never understood that from
Nobody
the get-go.
Nobody needed that.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Michelle. It has been an absolute pleasure, and I encourage people to read any one of the 14 books, because it will be a real treat. Michelle certainly is an authority on Italian cooking, and The Italian Slow Cooker is yet another great one. Thank you. You've been listening to A Taste of the Past, and I'm Linda Palacio. Our sponsor again has been Dixon's Farm Stand Meats, and I'd like to thank our producer, Jack Inslee, and our engineer, Nat Wiener.